And welcome, friends, to this, the Thursday edition of the Grace Hour. We are broadcasting live right here from our studios, which are located at the home of the Greater Grace World Outreach, right here in Baltimore, Maryland. Great to have you with us, friends, on this Thursday morning. At least it's Thursday morning here in Baltimore. It may be a different time of the day where you're listening to the broadcast, or if you're listening to it later, archived, we just want to thank you for taking the time to join us and be a part of our broadcast. And this week on the Grace Hour, we're talking about this wonderful theme that's highlighted throughout the book of Proverbs, and of course that is wisdom. And wisdom is so necessary and so needed in our lives today. There's not a better book in the Bible that, again, expresses wisdom, defines wisdom, and elaborates on that theme better than this book that we're looking at today. And today we'll be in the third chapter of the book of Proverbs. And we want to remind our listeners that you can weigh in and you can share your thoughts with us about our subject matter. Just go to the chat and ask your questions or share your comments that way. We'd be happy to hear from you today. Always enjoy knowing that you're listening to the broadcast and you can participate, and we invite you to do so and hope that many of you will do just that. My name is Pastor John Love. Joining me in the studio today on this Thursday edition of our broadcast, Pastor Steve Andrelonis will be your host for the next 45 minutes or so. So stay with us as we unfold together from the book of Proverbs, the third chapter. And Pastor Steve, I'll read these verses, which we have as an assignment today.
Yeah.
Verse 7, verse 8, be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord, depart from evil. It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones.
There you go. Always love a good navel verse, a belly button verse.
Oh, my gosh.
There's one in Song of Solomon, if you choose to look it up, about your navel. Health to the flesh, I think that's really what it's talking about. And I think, you know, we come on and we talk, and we hope that we're sharing things that are, we trust that God is leading us and by the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, and we're not really advertising that we're wise in our own eyes. We are really committed to taking you into the Scriptures, taking people into the Scriptures, and giving people something outside of themselves. And I think that's the instruction here in the first. Don't be wise in your own eyes. Are you looking for the answers inside of yourself and in your soul, your soulishness, in your feelings, you know, in your intellect? You know, I think that's the first thing. Fear the Lord, honor the Lord, and recognize your depravity, where you are. You know, fear the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And I think that's people who do not honor God and recognize who he is and see the gift of grace that all life is. I think that's, if you're missing that, then really, You're not even at the starting line. It's like, do you honor God? I mean, do you honor like his, you know, him as the creator? I mean, or are you alien to that? You know, have you turned yourself from that and, you know, just seeing life as an accident? It's like, you know, fear the Lord. It's a big one. Fear the Lord and turn away from your depravity. And but there's, you know, it is, we live in a world today that, you know, all the answers come from within us. Like, don't tell me what to do. I know myself better than you do. And I'm like, oh, you know, that's probably true, but I know that God knows you better than you know yourself. How about that?
Yeah. And you mentioned, of course, the health that it brings into our lives. And I don't want to say this or share this by way of condemning anybody that's listening, but it you can see the difference in the lives of those who put their trust in God and those who do not.
Yeah.
It just seems to be a clear line of demarcation. You can live a healthy life. Now, that is not to suggest that if we have believers listening to us today that have been diagnosed with a sickness or an illness or a disease, that they should look and within them and say, oh, then I must not be living right. We're not saying that. Because we live in bodies of sin and death. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, it catches up to all of us at some point in our lives. There's no doubt about that. But overall, it's kind of like when you go to the doctor's office and, you know, the questions they ask, whether you fill out the form or you actually speak with the doctor. Do you smoke? No. Do you drink alcohol? No. I've never had a doctor when I've answered that question and said, no, I don't drink. Oh, well, geez, you should. No, he often says, oh, that's good. Or, you know, do you smoke? And I say, no. Well, that's too bad. You're missing out on something. Now, you never hear those.
They don't say that.
No. They got to look at you like that's a wise choice that you've made there. Mm. But generally speaking, and this goes to John's third epistle, 3 John verse 2. John, writing to his close companion in the faith, says, my prayer is that you would prosper materially, even financially, and be in good health the same way your soul prospers. Mm-hmm. There is a connection between prospering in every sense of the word and our souls prospering. If our souls prosper, and we're living right before God. And I don't mean an impeccable life or a perfect life. And not a sinless life. Just a life of honesty and transparency before God. It results in soul prosperity, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think, you know, if you were to take this book itself, Proverbs, and allow it to give you a frame of reference for the way that you choose to go about your days, the probability is that you're going to at least not put yourself into situations that could tempt you, distract you, defeat you. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to have enemies. Like, it's just people who walk well seem to attract enemies. See Jesus Christ, right? He walked so well, so perfectly. He fed people with 5 loaves and 2 fish. He healed the blind, all those. And he still created, he had a whole government and a whole religious system turn against him and put him on the cross. So, but, when you said, if you follow this, like you said, the idea of smoking, the idea of wine. Now, I have had I guess like red wine is supposed to be something for good cholesterol. And I said, well, what about grape juice? I just did Welch's grape juice. I could do without. Go. You know, this says, you know, like I went over this, I think, with a few years ago. I was teaching like in the day school, the seniors, we did Proverbs. And I said, there are some things here that if you don't give yourself to too much sleep, if you don't let wine mock you, wine is a mocker. It's telling you don't drink too much. If you have a concern for the poor, if you are diligent in what you're doing, and if you can watch what you say, like don't gossip, like, you know, all of these things, like sort of answer that question. Like there's some things for strength. There's some things for soul there. There's some things for your mind there. And there's some things for your spirit. And we know that that's the Deuteronomy recipe. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And then Paul even says that in Galatians. If you do those two things, congratulations, you fulfilled all 10 commandments. Most likely. And, if you don't give yourself to wine, you don't give yourself to these things. And like the smoking kind of thing is just like, did you ever, when I was a young person, you know, I remember going to a county fair, and the American Lung Association had a booth there. And there they had these, you know, lungs of a person who had smoked for so long. And it was like, that was enough. That was enough. I think I was 13 or 14. And, you know, you could buy a pack of Marlboros for about 40 cents. So guys in the neighborhood, we'd get together 2 quarters and go and get a pack of cigarettes and, you know, each smoke 10. We were so bad. We were so bad smoking down. Well, what's now Mount Pleasant Church used to be Sedonia Mall. We used to smoke behind Sedonia Mall and the old Sedonia bowling alley. Now there are 2 churches there.
Redemption.
The scenes of my crimes there behind there. But it's like, it's kind of interesting. Like, but that was enough. You know, it's just like God, you know, you looked at that and I'm like, That's interesting. That's what happens to you, you know? And I didn't smoke enough to get the addictive nature, but I knew guys that, you know, I know guys that I went to high school with, and they I see it on some Facebook connections. They've battled some cancer and stuff like that. And, but they're still smoking, you know, it's still going strong like that. But, don't be wise in your own eyes, you know, yeah. Don't be wise in your own eyes. You think you can handle it. I think that's the bigger thing, right? I can deal with it. I can take one drink and I'll be okay.
And that makes us back up a little bit to yesterday's broadcast about, you know, trusting in the Lord with all of our hearts. And that word trust in the Hebrew language is a fascinating word. It means to lie helpless, face down.
Mm.
That's a great definition of what our lives should look like when we're trusting God.
Mm-hmm.
We are helpless. We cannot help ourselves. So self-help is out the window because we know that self can't help self.
Yeah.
So we lie helpless, face down, and it pictures a servant waiting for his master's command in readiness to obey, like a defeated soldier yielding to a conquering general. That's the idea behind it. That's the way we live before God.
Yeah.
I can't direct my steps, God, in Jeremiah 10:23. I've learned this, that the most misdirected life is a self-directed life. So I lie helpless, face down before you, because I don't want to risk leaning on my own understanding or being wise in my own eyes.
Yeah. I think when you read the Proverbs, you see how they sort of, like, there's sections where they sort of build on each other.
Mm.
And like you were discussing with Pastor Barry yesterday, that, you know, this idea of trusting in the Lord with your heart is like, it's a casting your cares upon him. It's putting yourself in his hands. And then, like you said, if you're leaning on your own understanding, you'll find that lean could put you right on your face. You know, if you're laying face down before the Lord, if you're honoring him and trusting in him, then, you know, you realize that your understanding is really small. And we've all found that out the hard way. You know, it's like, so in all your ways, acknowledge him, and then he'll make straight your paths. And then this next part is like, you know, okay, so don't be wise in your own eyes. I think, when we talk about, like, you would know the exact address, but the psalm that talks about the great presumption. What psalm is that?
Psalm 19.
Okay, Psalm 19. Avoid the presumptuous sins. And I was thinking about it this morning that in Proverbs, it's talking about, like, every generation seems to think that it has all the answers. So anything previous doesn't add up. That's the way I look at presumption. What's the great presumption? Well, we have more information than our fathers did and our grandfathers did. So what adds up for us is, like, that's presumption. It's like you think that you've got a corner on everything. Just wait 40 years. Your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, if you're in this generation, they're going to be saying, oh, you thought this? And I'm thinking about some of the dynamics that are out there. They're going to, like, say, what were they thinking? And we know the same thing. Like, what were, you know, when we think about, you know, in the nature of America, what were people thinking when they had these segregation laws and everything? How is that any way to create a unified society? And we know that we're still paying the price for some of those laws that lingered into the late 40s, you know. I was reading, like, a story. Maybe you've read some of these stories. I was reading, like, a story that, like Satchel Paige was in his 50s, and he still pitched in the World Series, and he pitched, like, 8 innings, and I think he allowed one hit, and he only threw one ball in the entire inning. Like, and he's 50 years old, and we're thinking, like, you know, and where was he? He spent most of his career in the segregated Negro leagues, so he was not part of the major leagues. But when he got to the major leagues at 50, he still had enough to, like, the one thing he did, I know, the one story is famous. Like, he told the person that was coming to bat, he said, I'm going to throw you 8 pitches, and they're all going to be the same pitch. And to 2 batters. And he said, and you're not going to touch one of them. And they didn't touch any of them. And they both sat down. It's like, I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, here was a, I'm just thinking like, you know, in our generation, we look back at this generation, how could people let that happen? And, you know, that doesn't dismiss the crime that it was, the sin that it was, but, you know, I'm sure people in Germany are like, how could our forefathers have let the Holocaust happen, you know? And they presume, you know, they presume this is never going to happen again. And all of a sudden we see like, you know, I'm looking at stories in Germany that there's like some anti-Semitism things happening going on. It's like, okay, this happened. You thought that you had buried these kind of things. It's like, this is leaning on your own understanding. And it is like, you gotta, there's a, maybe, you know, maybe you could describe it better, what it means to turn away from evil. Just those two words, turn away. It's a lot. It seems like we just like turn our back on it, but there's got to be like this trust in the Lord with your own heart. It's like, there's a stronger depth to that statement, like turning away from evil. It's like, stiff arming it. Like,
that's a good way to describe it. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you have to take drastic, dramatic measures to turn away from it. Mm-hmm. It might even mean separating from associations or people who could lead you down a road that could have dangerous and disastrous results for your faith. It might mean, you know, choosing to spend more time with, well, walk with the wise and you'll become wise.
There you go. And, yeah, that's
again,
good.
Proverbs 13:20, right?
Uh-huh.
So, but let me, here's a good question. What happens potentially, and let's use a couple of biblical examples of what happens when we lean on our own understanding. Let's take Abraham, the father of our faith, for example.
Okay.
He's called of God. In Genesis chapter 12, he leaves the Ur of the Chaldeans. God says, I've chosen you. I'm going to make of you a people, a nation of my, you know, my own doing, and I'm going to lead you into a land called promise. So off he goes. You know, what a great example of faith. But then he comes to the brink of the promised land in Genesis chapter 12, verses 10 through 20. And what does he do? He leans on his own understanding because he realizes there's a famine in the land. Mm. I can't go into a land that flows, supposedly flows with milk and honey when there's a famine. So I'll lean on my own understanding and I'll go down into Egypt. Oh, what a disastrous result that was. I mean, he lost his faith. He lost his courage. He almost lost his wife. He almost lost his life.
Yeah.
I mean, it was disastrous. Mm-hmm. And then he had to be rebuked by an unsaved king to get it right before God. And then God brought him right back to the point of where he got off track. That can happen when we lean on our own understanding. Then take another example in the book of Joshua. Joshua leading the children of Israel into the promised land. Mm-hmm. The campaign has begun. It started at Jericho. God gave them a great victory at Jericho. That was an impossible battle to win unless, of course, God gave it to them, which he did.
Yeah.
But then they moved on to the next military part of that campaign, which was a little town called Ai. Mm-hmm. Well, Joshua doesn't think he needs to consult God. After all, in his mind, we just defeated Jericho. Mm-hmm. That was one of his mistakes. He didn't defeat Jericho. God gave them that city. But he moves on into the little town of Ai and thinks, we don't even need all the men. Mm-hmm. We don't need our forces. Let's just go in, take this little town, and move on to the next challenge in the process of taking this land that God has given us. They suffer their only and worst defeat of the entire military campaign at Ai. We read it in Joshua chapter 7. That's what happens when we lean to our own understanding. The results could be disastrous.
It's true. Wise in your own eyes. You see that city? We don't need all these people. And I think that points out something that maybe we could talk about a little bit, is like the idea, what's worship mean? And I think part of worship, okay, they had a great victory. Did they really worship? Because obviously the worship that they conducted after the great victory did not include any kind of self-examination. They did not say to the Lord, search me. Because if the people of Israel had said, search me, O God, then it might have been revealed that Achan had stolen what he had stolen, and there would have been the sin in the camp would have been known and dealt with before, and then they might have got a better observation of this tiny little city. Like a little leaven leavened the whole lump, as it says in Galatians. the little leaven of sin leavened the whole thing and brought the whole company, the whole nation to defeat there. So they didn't really worship the Lord in the way that they should have. So it should have been like, I've seen that. You've probably read these things, like examination is part of worship, confession. Once you've examined and you realize you got to bring something to the Lord. And then after confession, you know, it's like hearing the word of God and praising. But if you leave one of those things out, this happens. And it's kind of interesting when I'm thinking, you're telling me this story there. It's kind of, he's going from Ur of the Chaldeans on one side, right? On one side of the Middle East over there near, I'm thinking it's down there in the lower part of Saudi Arabia near the Iran border that's now. And he comes all the way over. That's a city of idols. He comes all the way over and he sees the promised land. He's a, oops, famine. Now I'll just go over here to Egypt. And what is Egypt? And we know from Exodus that Egypt also was a place of idolatry for the, right? For the most part, right? I mean, well, yeah, I'm not sure. Apparently when they got Joseph in the thing, they worshiped the Lord. But by the time Moses came back, there was all these gods and goddesses that God had to judge with all the plagues. But it's like kind of interesting. You were just called out of an idolatrous situation and now you put yourself in. It's kind of interesting. Look where it led, right?
You're always heading for trouble when you become wise
in your own eyes. Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't we be better off? Wouldn't it, life would be safer if we just said, look, I don't have any wisdom. I don't have what it takes, you know, to, and I go back to Jeremiah 10:23. I know, O Lord, it is not in man to direct his own steps.
No.
And if it's not in there, it's not in there. Paul said it a little differently, but the same principle. Romans 7:18. I know, O Lord, that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells no good thing. We could also include in that statement, no wisdom either. Yeah. We need wisdom that comes from above. If we accept the wisdom that's from below, in James 3, it's worldly, it's sensual, it's devilish, and it's dangerous, and it will lead to trouble in our lives. So, I mean, oftentimes when I think of the deliverance that God has brought into my life, I'm so grateful that he delivered me from sin. I'm so grateful that he delivered me from the devil. I'm so grateful that he delivered me from the world. But I'm most grateful that he delivered me from myself, because I sometimes can be my greatest enemy.
Yeah.
And because I find myself from time to time being wise in my own eyes, which always leads to trouble.
So this morning I woke up early, did a Bible college class on Esther 7 to a group in another part of the world, the other part of the world where it's already, I think it's already tomorrow in that part of the world now. But, you know, we're talking about that. And there you have, like, you know, a guy who is really wise in his own eyes, Haman. Like, he had lots of money. Suddenly he found himself with power, you know, and he had influence with the king. And it all came undone, you know, because here's a person who wasn't wise in her own eyes, you know, Esther. And we see, you know, how God undid that situation. You know, the Jews were targeted for disaster, for destruction, annihilation by Haman. And he thought he had it all figured out. He had it so figured out that he was going to start his campaign by lifting one guy up high, you know, on a gallows that he built. And then, you know, the pride of life swallowed him up. And then before he knew it, he's begging. It's like he was thinking he was going to kill all of the Jewish nation. And then here he finds himself begging for his life before a Jewish woman who was Esther. And the king saw it and thought something else. And the next thing you know, he's the one lifted high above. And I'm thinking, here's a guy who was wise in his own eyes. I got enough money. I got enough power. I can take care of this people. Why do I want to do it? Because this one guy will not bow down to me. It's like, you know, so I'm going to take care of everyone related to him. And God protected it. You know, fear the Lord, turn away from evil. So Esther was wise in her own eyes because she did what her uncle said. Don't reveal who you are. You know, don't talk about where you came from. Just go through the whole beauty pageant. And what you know, the king falls in love with you. And then when you need to bring that piece of information out, then you bring that piece of information out, you know. And so, if you fear the Lord, honor the Lord, you'll be put in a place. Look at the victory that she won. There's a whole celebration in the Jewish calendar because of what Esther did in bringing herself before the king at a particular moment. So, when you're wise in your own eyes are very limited. I think that's the bigger thing. We have a limited capacity to see things, right?
Sure. And of course, our own eyes always imply that we are walking by sight. Mm. And we are warned not to walk by sight, but to walk by faith. There's a beautiful story in 2 Chronicles chapter 20. The children of Israel are outnumbered and outmanned as their enemies march against them. We read of the children of Amnon and Moab, Mount Seir, coming against them. And Jehoshaphat, who is leading the children of Israel at this time, he basically comes before God and he says, Lord, won't you judge them? For we don't have any might against this great company that comes against us. And I love this part of the verse. And it's 2 Chronicles 20:12. He said, neither do we know what to do, but our eyes are upon you. Mm. So your options are very limited. There's just two.
Yeah.
You can either be wise in your own eyes, or your eyes can be upon him. It makes sense. I mean, I think this is what it means when Paul wrote to the Ephesians and he talked to them about walking circumspectly, mm-hmm. not as fools, but as wise. Well, what did he mean? You might just say, Lord, I don't know what to do, but my eyes are upon you. That's safety. That's security. That's faith. That's confidence. Mm. The world might not see it that way. The world might think, you know what? You better open your eyes. You better make some decisions. But I think that Jehoshaphat did the best thing he could do, which was, we don't know what to do, Lord. Mm-hmm. But our eyes, the eyes of our faith, are firmly fixed upon you. And of course, the results were great victory for God's people.
There we go.
Because they confessed, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I'm not wise in our own eyes.
Yeah, amazing. When he got the instruction from God, this battle belongs to the Lord, right? Is it say in that passage too that the battle belongs? It's not God speaks to him, the king, through,
yes.
I think, one of the prophets. This is not your battle. This is the battle that belongs to the Lord. And, I think early in David's career, we see a couple of places he defeated the Philistines one way. And then the next time he consulted God again, and God said, you're not going to do it this way. You're going to hide in these trees. And when you hear the sound of the army going over your head, then you're going to go out to the battle. Because, I could see like God was training David, like, yep, you are a giant slayer, and you fired that stone in the name of the Lord, and you won that battle. And you won this battle this way, but you gotta put yourself into the, don't be wise in your own eyes. And, we see that this kind of tenderness that David was applied in his life for the most part. I would say 90%. He did have this season with Bathsheba and then numbering the people. These things we know did happen. But Abigail, a woman, comes to him and says, don't go down and do something with in the case of Nabal. He said, don't go down and do something, that's out of character, that's you're going to regret for the rest of your life. Cause mm-hmm. It's not the kind of fight you need to fight. And he listened to that. So David why was David put in the place of that? Psalm 78 says, God took him from watching over the ewes great with young. So he was used to following and watching a flock, and God, that's where he got the wisdom he needed to be there. He didn't, and then when he saw Goliath, he didn't see Goliath. He saw Goliath in the context of the name of the Lord and as an enemy of God, not as his own enemy. And I think that's why he could run, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he learned wisdom like all of us do. One of our folks that are listening, Zolly writes, so what do we do when, because of our sin, we face irreversible consequences? In other words, he's saying, what happens when we are wise in our own eyes and we make foolish decisions? And what if sometimes those foolish decisions result in irreversible consequences? Well, I mean, all we can do when we fail is to confess our failure, yeah. confess our sin. God's faithful and just to forgive us and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Sometimes the consequences stay with us, but God will give us the grace to deal with those consequences as we, again, confess our sin. There's nothing we can do to necessarily erase the consequences, but no. God will give us his grace so that we will be able to, again, move forward with our lives.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Zacchaeus gives us a good example. We know that he found salvation and he said, you know, if I've wronged anybody, I restore to him fourfold. You may not get that option. I mean, you might, you know, like I know, you know, the devil, the accuser is like very good at like opening a closet door for you and out comes something you did, you know, in your 20s when you were stupid or in your teens when you were stupid. And, you know, and you know, there's no way to find that person. There's no way to take back the words you said. And, you know, there's a grief there. So grieve. And like you said, confess it, bring it to the Spirit. I can't undo this, but do we believe that God is everywhere present? You know, I usually, I read it somewhere. I don't know what book I read it in, but there was a book about that. Like, you know, just like, you know, you just take it to the Lord. You ask the Holy Spirit to find that person. You pray a blessing on that person, and you just have to trust God that that He is there. Do I believe that God is everywhere present and that He can find that person and do something, and that my prayer actually makes a difference? And then don't lean on your own understanding again, and don't be wise in your own eyes. Well, I got to figure out a way to make this right. Well, you know, that might. You know, suppose that person doesn't want you to make it right. So suppose they want to nurture their hatred for the rest of their life. You know, that could happen, right?
Sure. And sometimes we can only find comfort for those irreversible consequences through God's promises, such as all things are going to work together for the good to those that love God and are mm-hmm. called according to his purpose. We have to believe that.
Yeah.
When it comes to our sin and our failure, and that's once it's been confessed, mm-hmm. We leave that in the rearview mirror. Stop yeah. looking at it. Follow the Apostle Paul's great advice. This one thing I do, forgetting the things which are behind and pressing on to the things which are before me. So you're forgiven. You're cleansed. Be reminded of that. Joseph, he named his two sons in such a way that he would be reminded that God caused him to forget and that God made him fruitful in the land of his affliction. Yeah. Joseph could have spent the rest of his life in Egypt, tormented by what had happened to him. He wasn't going to let that happen. He was going to look to God. And when he named his two sons, one was Manasseh, the other one was Ephraim. One of the names means God has caused me to forget. The other name means God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. So every time he would look at his children, he would be reminded of how God works everything together for his good.
Yeah, so I think, you know, confession is just, you know, it's all we can do. I mean, and you might have to confess a lot. I mean, it might be you might get reminded of that. I mean, Paul had a thorn in the flesh. Some people have said it might have been a physical ailment. And I watched, there's a really great movie called Paul the Apostle of Christ. And in there, he's in prison and he's wrestling with dreams about the way that he persecuted people and seeing people fall down dead because of his persecution. So could that be the thorn in the flesh? Like, and he, you know, he wakes up from this dream, this nightmare that your grace is sufficient, your grace is sufficient, your grace is sufficient. It's like, so... erasing your memory banks may be impossible, but confession is always, you know, you can always bring it before the Lord again. Why is fearing the Lord and departing from evil better than being wise in your own eyes? I think that's self-explanatory. I mean, God made all things and evil is going to suck you into something that you can't, like you said, like you can't undo it. And so you might wrestle with this all the way till the throne of grace, till you're before God. You know, you might be wrestling with that just like Paul was. I besought God three times, you know, Moses said, please, please, please let me go in the promised land. And God says, talk to the hand.
Yeah.
Can't do it. Can't do it. There's an example I need to set by you. I can't really do that. And, you know, it's just, you know, we just, you know, come to the Lord and ask that. And that's, I think, is the second part. Like, you know, how do we allow our flesh to be healthy, healing to our navel and refreshment to our bones? And I think, you know, bones are important. You know, the marrow is what produces the blood supply that we have, the marrow of our bones. And we want to be right at our core with God. And I think that's, you know, like you said, you read the verse from 3 John about prosper as your soul prospers, like your body is going to be healthy as your soul prospers. And again, these are pronouncements we're making. It's, you know, I mean, you may find yourself facing cancer. You may be afflicted for the sake of the glory of God. You know, how did Pastor Stevens put it? For a testimony in the cosmic conflict or something like that, you know? So you might be afflicted. You know, Joni Erickson Tada, you know, she probably prayed a million billion times to have, like, to be able to rise up and walk, and it still hasn't happened. But she's been able to sing, she's been able to paint, she's been able to be married, have a very fruitful ministry throughout these decades, you know.
Amen. Job said something interesting. Job 21:24, he said, God has moistened my bones with marrow.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I like that.
Spiritual health happens when God moistens our bones with marrow. But really, when we're talking about marrow, and again, we're not doctors, so we don't have
no,
all
we don't
the
know
information.
All of that.
We don't have all of that information, but we do know this, that walking in the light, walking with God, agreeing with God, Amos 3:3, produces great health, great spiritual prosperity. And we've been the beneficiaries. And I'm sure you have too, Pastor Steve, you can just look at some people and you just know they've been walking with God. Yeah. They're healthy. They're upright. There's a quietness, a peace, a calmness about their souls that tells you they are not overcome, or they have not become a prisoner of anxiety in their lives, and that God is just prospering their souls because they're learning to live by every word that comes out of the mouth of God.
I think that verse that you said there from Job answers that other thing, like the idea of envy, another proverb. Envy is as rotten as to the bones. And I think that we know envious people who are totally dissatisfied. You know, I could do better. I deserve better. You know, I mean, I read one study about the way marriages fall apart, like one partner starts to envy. I could do better. I deserve better. You know, and then the next thing you know, they have a contempt for their spouse and they're out the door. And, envy is as rotten as to the bones. It's like, you don't realize the whole thing about your life is a gift from God. It's like, I think, you know, when I was doing the Esther story, I'm thinking this girl was just, she just had God-given beauty. And then she got a year's worth of cosmetic and bath treatment. And then the king looked at her and said, wow, you're my queen. It's like she didn't do anything to get herself into that position. It was a gift of grace for her to deliver the thing. And that's like, envy just rots you out. It's like, it just rots you out. Like, and that's such a good verse. Moisture, give moisture to my bones. Yeah, I want to be tenderized, right?
Oftentimes, people ask the question, you know, how are you doing? And one of the best answers I've heard to that question is, you know, better than I deserve.
Wow.
Better than I deserve. Mm. And why? What are we saying when we make that kind of a statement? I am the recipient of God's grace. Mm. I'm so filled with gratitude because I've gotten what I don't deserve. I am forgiven. I am cleansed. I am accepted before God. I'm complete in Christ. I'm already seated in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. God looks at me as if I'd never sinned.
There we are.
That's all grace. Mm. I mean, it's like you think you're going to go through life in the economy class on an aircraft. But the next thing you know, they come and they take you and they say, you know, you're in first class. And you're sitting up there and you're thinking to yourself, wow, this is amazing. You might look across the aisle to someone that's grumpy and complaining and I paid for this and where's my second pillow and this food is cold. But we're up there saying, wow, how did I get here? God did it. God blessed me. God gave me his grace. And I'm just so thankful.
Wow. Yeah, just, yeah, seeing that, yeah. So why would you, wisdom, I think the word wise, like, trips me up a little bit in this, because I'm thinking, like, if I am following, walking by sight, I'm totally unwise. It's like, there is no wisdom there at all, because I don't understand all things. I'm not everywhere present. I'm not all powerful. I can't fix things. I can't fix myself. Like, there's no way that I can fix myself. It's like I got, and there's a reason why that, you know, there's a reason why Psalm 136 keeps saying again and again, his mercy endures forever. His mercy is forever. His mercy is forever. I like to put that with the verse in Psalm 119 that says, the earth is full of mercy, God's mercy. I think it's verse 64. It's like, and I think about it when you know, if God didn't have mercy on us, if he just let everything, you know, roll to its logical conclusion, its logical, natural conclusion, there'd be nothing left, right? You know, if he didn't send rain, that fire that started over in the middle of Baltimore probably wouldn't be totally out today. But the rain came yesterday. I think it put out the pockets of smoldering. They were saying it was going to smolder with the winds and everything for a few days. So that's mercy. Like, God could have just let it go. Like, no, let's just send rain on the just and the unjust. Yeah. On John and Steve today and Jehu.
Let's learn to walk circumspectly. And that word's a beautiful word. It means accurately, precisely. Yeah. How can you walk accurately or precisely unless you're receiving every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God?
That's true.
He goes on to say, don't be unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And I mean, you know, could we say today to our audience, I'm always living in the perfect will of God? Perhaps not. But I want to understand what the will of God is, and I want to be in that will, because it's going to be health to my bones. I'm going to be moistened with marrow, and I'm going to be strengthened for whatever challenges lie ahead. So I think we've covered the topic as best as we can, Pastor Steve. We're out of time, but thanks for being here today.
It's great.
Pastor Schaller, of course, is returning from South America. So we're grateful to hear the reports of how things went down there and a wonderful time gathering with the saints in Chile and then in Argentina following that. So he'll be back next week. And we'll be back tomorrow, friends, for the Thursday edition. No, I'm sorry, the Friday edition.
This is Thursday.
I'm already getting ahead of myself. That's what happens.
Well, it's Christmas season. You know, everything just runs together.
I'm too wise in my own eyes. So, Lord, thank you so much for a great broadcast. Thank you for a wonderful audience. And we hope that you'll make your plans to join us for the Friday edition of the Grace Hour coming up a little less than 24 hours from now. Until then, may God bless you.